084267 Schlocker versus the Law Office of Philip Rotschy. Mr. Warner.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Curtis Warner, and I am counsel for the plaintiffs Jean, Terry, and Alfred Schlocker. Plaintiffs appeal the amount of the lump sum award of attorney's fees and costs by the district court that abuses the discretion in not awarding what is a reasonable award of attorney's fees and costs as mandated by the statute.
I have a question for you, because obviously you, as you have just acknowledged, you are dealing with an abuse of discretion standard of review, and it's not clear to me whether you're arguing really that there's just not enough of an explanation from the district court for the number that it came up with, or whether there's just some automatic something about a fee of $6,500 that means that we just have to find it with use of discretion.
Well, Judge Wood, there's actually the clear and concise is one of the arguments that we are arguing, that the district court's record in its oral opinion is completely vague as far as the needed calculations. The lodestar method wasn't done. There are precise, like even pennies, that the judge would have had to have arrived at in which to comply with this court's precedents, including its decision 2 weeks ago in the estate of Enoch versus Tenor, where it says that the lodestar calculation must be done first.
Why would it be necessary for Judge Hader to engage in a formal lodestar analysis, given the relatively modest amounts of money involved? I mean, we've approved a more relaxed approach where the amount of fees in question was low.
Well, Your Honor, there are parts of discretion that a judge can take, but however, it should become clear to this court, and based upon the court's comments in the previous motion, that the court didn't even want to hear a fee petition. So that how can there be any discretion when you have a court that doesn't even want to address the issue? As far as the relaxed standard going, plaintiff's contention is that the district's court equating the exact amount of plaintiff's recovery to the actual award of attorney's fees is an abuse of discretion.
It's true that the $6,500 fee award matches the amount that plaintiffs recovered, but that's not how Judge Hader calculated the fee award. He just pointed out that, coincidentally, the two amounts were the same. It was a remark.
Well, Your Honor, it's not as clear and concise as that, because the district court also says, quote, "I'm not going to grant the requested rate. It seems to me that a figure roughly equates to what the plaintiffs themselves recover is reasonable." It's not clear and concise which way he's going.
But then he repeatedly said he was reducing the fee because of the collaboration among the four lawyers, which he thought one good lawyer could deal with. And it led to duplicative work, excessive billing. I mean, so he made other comments. He repeatedly said that. He just mentioned this coincidental thing once.
Your Honor, that is on the record. But however, the exact calculations, especially a $788 reduction because plaintiff's counsel had to, our defense counsel had to brief the issue, is not found in any law. It is completely absurd.
No, Mr. Warner, it is not absurd. Of the four attorneys, you were the only fair debt collection practices act specialist, and your fees totaled roughly $6,000. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that in itself is an appropriate benchmark for a reasonable fee award in this case. Why in heaven's name would you need four lawyers here?
Well, Your Honor,
it sort of has boggled my mind.
Well, Your Honor, as the record reflects, that I was not the attorney that even met with the clients originally. The clients were in the suburbs. I am in downtown Chicago.
So why didn't, after McLaughlin and Fiofano referred them to you, why did they continue billing?
Because, Your Honor, sometimes there needs to be a communication between attorneys upon collaborative nature of the facts and also as to the course of methods to take.
Is it your position that that each individual person has his or her own individual lawyer? and that there's something about group representation here?
No, Your Honor. There is. It was a collaborative effort. We filed this shortly before the statute of limitations because...
Right. I mean, I don't mean to... It would almost help your position if there were some reason mm-hmm. why each person starts out with their own lawyer and keeps up with their own lawyer to some degree. But you're conceding, basically, that this was a joint case.
It was a joint case because there was joint action of belittling and humiliating and abusive tactics and to collect a debt on a dentist.
The members of this one family.
The members of the one family. But as far as the district court's opinion, it also failed. It committed an error of law in that the defendants misled the district court as to the facts in the record and as to case law. Clearly, there was an established rate for each attorney for their over 200. There was over 200 pages of documentation. The district court didn't even submit.
Yeah, but the problem was their billing rate was based on the type of cases that they pursued, and you were the only one that was a specialist in this area.
But the
so,
law.
So I mean, that's why he didn't use their rate.
Well, the law says that these are consumer cases. They're all consumer attorneys, and you can use similar billing rates for similar types of cases. And even if
you can, but the question is actually, must you? Was the district judge abusing his discretion when he thought that there was a distinction here?
Your Honor, in Zergowski versus Midwest Billing, the district court actually, or this court has stated that in order to calculate fees under an FDCPA case, you can use the model in 1988 cases for an award of attorney fees. So there are similarities between consumer cases, be it with cars or representing labor disputes. Those are all types of consumer cases where they vindicate important statutory rights, and therefore you can use them. But even as far as the discretion, even if this was a pure one-attorney case, my hourly rates of $260 and $285, which was originally not even disputed and challenged by the defendants, along with my hours, if you throw in Ms. McLaughlin's firm's paralegal and the costs, the district court still awarded less money than what the defendants had offered in the first round of negotiations under
but
Local Rule 54.
I want to go back to this collaboration because I just really don't get this. This has to do with a payment for a root canal. They were supposed to make this monthly payment. They got a harassing phone call from an employee of the dentist, and they called the office hoping to work the thing out, and that was basically it in terms of the facts. Well, so I don't get this collaboration and the other three lawyers and all this time that you all had to, you know, ponder this Fair Debt Collection Practices Act case.
Well, each attorney did separate billing as far as motion practice, as far as researching the affirmative defenses. There was also defense had taken action in threatening sanctions to plaintiff's counsel if two of the defendants would not withdraw their acceptance. Given the time that's short, Mr. Fail-Fanoff, and this is the only billing that Mr. Fail-Fanoff is seeking, is to research whether or not one or two of multiple plaintiffs can accept a Rule 68 offer of judgment while one doesn't. They threatened sanctions against us. It was
and
prudent.
You did not research that question?
I did not research it originally. I then I left it up to Mr. Fail-Fanoff because of time constraints. He then sent me his memorandum of law. I turned it into a brief and edited it into a Rule 11 safe harbor motion, which we would present if they did follow through on their frivolous position that they would sanction. Collaboration, this is the same situation if you have a partner and a few associates working together in a small law firm. Just because there are three separate firms with four attorneys doesn't make any difference when you compare it to a small law firm that has four attorneys.
So you think the district court overstated the amount of duplication and overlap that occurred?
That is correct. We actually did a self reduction of 25% of our time before we submitted our bill. And we did that out of caution because the district court did improperly threaten sanctions to the prevailing party. I see that my time is up and over.
Yeah, well, let me just say this. The court, Judge Ader said, this was an uncomplicated, low-stakes case that settled within 3 months of filing and without discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And that cannot be viewed as an abuse of discretion.
Your Honor, if the time records state that we as plaintiffs had to respond to defendants' actions within the case. It's what is reasonable should be awarded, not what the bare minimum that should have taken, as reasonableness is arranged. But there's other factors that show that the district court committed an error.
And maybe I misread the record. Wasn't it just one response that you filed to the motion?
We filed two motions, actually, Your Honor. We filed a motion to strike one of the affirmative defenses. One was taken under consideration. We also filed a motion to compel their deponents, Mr. Rachi himself and his employee, because they were failing to produce him.
Right, and those motions were how many pages each?
The one motion, I believe, was approximately 8 pages on the motion to strike the affirmative defense.
And the other one?
The other one was probably a 2-page motion.
Right. And that's what all that consulting was about, in addition to learning the facts, 10 pages worth of motions.
Well, there was also the unfiled motion but was attached to the motion, which time when defendants take a course of conduct, especially threatening sanctions, you do need to prudently respond. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Shelton.
Good morning, Your Honors. Tim Shelton on behalf of the defendant law firm. May it please the court. We find ourselves embroiled here in a second, second, in quotes, major litigation, strictly over attorney's fees, which is not something this court has ever advocated, and in fact, the irony in this case is there was never a first major litigation. This is a small, as the court has said, garden variety, straightforward FDCPA case, low stakes, not seriously contested, settled in a couple of months, no discovery. Defendants tried to discover to settle this so quickly that we even made offers of judgment against ourselves before we answered, before we filed an affirmative defense. And those were denied, rejected, and then we had to answer, so we answered. The case proceeded. We again put settlement offers out there on the about 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, and those were accepted. Bingo. Mm-hmm. And the case was over.
Okay.
And if there really aren't any questions, I don't have a lot more to add.
Mm-mm. No questions.
Thank you very much.
Did you want to say something more?
Yes, Your Honor.
How much time? Oh, well, we'll give
just
a minute. Yeah, that's okay.
Just one statement. Defendant is blaming the plaintiff for all of this. If the first offers was a offer of settlement that was specifically to exclude attorney's fees, this court sanctioned in the city of New Berlin that attorney, ordered him to show cause for why he didn't realize that when you settle a case and leave it to the district court to decide, that it cuts off your attorney fees. Second, defendant's fee was a fee-exclusive case, which this court just 2 weeks ago stated that it regrettably it causes more litigations. Plaintiffs didn't cause this mess. The defendants did, and that the defendants should have to pay reasonable attorney's fees and costs for doing so. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Warner. Thank you. Mr. Shelton, the case will be taken under advisement. We're going to go on to